I heartily endorse this event or product.
Ahoy, hoy, everybody. Welcome to Talk to the Audience, where this is always death. I am one of your hosts for this one, Bob Mackey. And who else is here with me today?
Thankfully, not at San Diego Comic-Con, Henry Gilbert.
We'd be dead. And our special guest is here. We have another third chair for Talk to the Audience.
Hi, it's me, Gary Butterfield.
Gary Butterfield of DuckFeed.tv,
yeah.
Podcast like Watch Out for Fireballs.
Yeah, Watch Out for Fireballs, Days of Future Cast, Everything to Guppy, Radio Free Midworld.
Yes, Gary will tell you more about his podcast at the end if you go to patreon.com/DuckFeed.
Absolutely. DuckFeed TV.
DuckFeed TV. That's yes. Where all your stuff is.
Yeah, cool. Absolutely. I happened to be in the living room when this was being recorded, and I'm happy about that.
Yay. Thank you for sitting in on this. So, in case you're new to the network, this is our monthly community podcast. We go over news in the Simpsons universe, and we also respond to questions and comments on Patreon from episodes we've done in the past month. And we have some really cool news for you guys. Thanks to Connection at Netflix, we are big cheeses now, buddy. I'll tell you what. We have exclusive access to the first 5 episodes of Disenchantment as of now. So on August 7th, we will have a special Patreon exclusive review of the first 5 episodes. And then when it's live,
well, then we're going to do a regular episode of the first episode of Disenchantment for What a Cartoon. So we'll be doing that as that week's episode. And I believe that episode will go live on August 20th.
Right. So we're old hands in the video game industry. We know about embargoes. There are certain things we can and can't do, but we can give you lots of info early according to their rules. But we'll have lots of opinions.
Mm-hmm. The main character is a descendant of Maggie Simpson.
Damn it.
I can neither confirm nor deny that. I don't know what would break embargo and information on this, but what I can say about Disenchantment is it's having its San Diego Comic-Con panel like the day we're recording this, or maybe the day after, which is hosted by our newest best pal in LA, Allie Gertz.
I think she's doing a bunch of panels, and she's doing a Mad Magazine panel, I think a women writers panel probably too. Yeah,
she's all up in San Diego, but as I'm not surprised she's doing Disenchantment because on that panel is Josh Weinstein, who her and Julia are of Everything's Coming Up Simpsons are. They seem to be real good buddies with Josh Weinstein.
He's the cool uncle of that podcast.
He is a cool uncle. And so there might be some new trailers and stuff coming out of that, but we've already seen it. But so I told Allie on Twitter, like, man, that's so awesome. I wish I was there for that. But one thing that's causing a little bit of a shadow on this Disenchantment story is that unfortunately Matt Groening had to say something about Apu, which it is like, if I'm an interviewer, I'm going to ask Matt Groening, what do you think about this Apu thing? Because it won't go away. And Matt Groening kind of doubled down on a thing he said before. To quote, you should read the whole article in the New York Times, but one of his spiciest quotes was, "I think particularly right now, people feel so aggrieved and crazed and powerless that they're picking the wrong battles."
It's a bad thing to say. I think from his perspective, he thinks, oh, my intentions are pure and like go fight Trump, fight racists, fight Nazis. I'm making a cartoon.
Should.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. But that doesn't mean that other things are still an issue that should not be addressed.
Mm-hmm. I think that anytime you're telling someone else what they can or cannot be offended
about,
you're kind of fucking up.
No, and I also don't like that. I still am disappointed in it because like people found perfect Matt Groening Life in Hell comics that say the exact fucking opposite of what he's saying.
Yeah.
They just like him basically in all but word complaining about political correctness there. He made fun of people who complained about political correctness in the 90s in Life in Hell.
I'm not making apologies for Matt Groening, but I feel like he's trying to be sympathetic, but he's also getting it way wrong because he's saying, you know, I understand why you are sensitive. This is a very tough time to live in, but also leave me alone.
And it's like it's not his thing, Apu. Like, it's not, he wouldn't have created the character. He said he liked naming Apu after the Apu trilogy. Though I also saw, you know, the creator of The Problem with Apu, Hari Kondabolu, he responded to this too and saying like, well, first off, he said, hey, I'm going to be at San Diego Comic-Con when you're here, Matt. Why don't we grab some coffee and talk about this? But it's also, he said a thing that I also liked in his responses to when Al Jean was talking about it, which he's like, these the counter arguments from some of these Simpsons people are things I directly address in the documentary. So if you haven't watched it, you can't be mad at my response if you don't know I already addressed your response to it.
They really need to watch it before they say anything.
Yeah. Well, it's a funny thing too, because like, and forgive me if this stuff has all been covered on this show before, but like, when actors and actresses die, they retire characters. Like, it's not like retiring a character is outside of the purview of The Simpsons. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not like something they would never consider. So why such attachment to this unless you are being, you're doubling down because you're being asked to do something?
Yeah, well, they have really laid off Apu in recent years, too.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't watched a recent episode in a long time, but on one of the many Mike Reese interviews I've heard, because he's done a lot of them on podcasts, he said himself that we quietly retired Apu 2 years ago and no one noticed. So that could be true. I don't know if he's misremembering or if Apu has not shown up in 2 years.
Well, and I don't agree with Matt Groening or what Mike Reese said about it, too, but I can empathize with their positions, whereas them as very rich Hollywood writers who, you know, aren't in around regular people all the time, in their impression, no one complained until now. And also that they've been to India. They've met Indian fans. And in their memory, they never said a negative thing about Apu. And I don't want to argue with their memory, but that still doesn't mean that all Indian people don't love Apu and think he's great.
Yeah, that's true.
And so it's touchy for them. I feel bad for them because I don't think they had a stereotypical or racist reason for making Apu. And we've talked about this a ton, but I just wish Matt Groening would stop putting his foot in his mouth, but
It's like a 201 privilege lesson to realize that no oppressed group speaks for every other member of that group, no matter what they are. You know, and that's like, you know, you initially learn to listen a little bit, but then you're like, okay, I have a black friend. And then you need to realize, actually, our black friend does not reflect on this other black person, who indeed is a separate human with separate feelings and emotions and reasons.
Well, it's hard enough to listen to one person who isn't white. I got to listen to three? Come on.
Yeah, so again, kind of disappointing, but hopefully it won't cast a shadow over Disenchantment, which we are excited to see.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. but also coming out of Comic-Con, there will be a Simpsons panel. Like, who knows what will come out of that? But they already put up a Simpsons Comic-Con poster, which previews the next Treehouse of Horror. And I have the text here that tells us what the four, because it's four segments now with four commercial breaks.
I don't like that.
Four segments of Treehouse of Horror will be. So, Homer wins an oyster-eating contest against the mythical Cthulhu. Springfield is overrun by plant body snatchers. Lisa finally snaps, and Mr. Burns opens a retirement home with some Jurassic updates.
Oh, wow. I mean, I haven't seen, so I've not seen a Treehouse of Horror with four acts before, but I've watched the show with four acts. And that fourth act is usually like 30 seconds long. So I wonder what they even do with that fourth act in the Halloween segment. Is it just like a one sight gag? It's weird.
It goes pretty fast, as I recall. I didn't watch the full last Treehouse, just the disgusting Homer eating him. Disturbing.
We watched that together. It was disturbing.
Yeah. But so you can look forward to, finally, the Simpsons are doing a Jurassic Park, well, really, Jurassic World parody. After they already did a Jurassic Park parody in Itchy and Scratchy.
Please, really, Billy and the Clonosaurus.
Yeah, Billy and the Clonosaurus.
What were you thinking?
Speaking of Jurassic Park, we went to the Simpsons theme park. We did an entire episode about our LA trip, and we got so much great stuff out of that. That is on the Patreon. Check it out. It's about 45 minutes long. We recount all of our fun times and recording with big shots from Cartoon Network and big shots from other Simpsons podcasts.
Yeah, we had a really good time, and you can also, we've put out the episode with Ellie and Julia from Everything's Coming Up Simpsons from our side, but we also recorded an episode of their podcast, which should be coming soon. I don't know exactly when, but
they said like 2 or 3 weeks, and it might be next week or the week after. It's coming soon.
But look forward to that, folks. And there's more to come from LA. And that LA trip, it still feels like we got back a week ago today. But
I
still feel like I'm here.
Yeah, that is bizarre.
It's been 7 days. I can't believe it. But we did have this is tangentially related to What a Cartoon. Bob and me went to a Pillows concert.
Yeah, that's right. I finally got a ticket. So if on the Fooly Cooly episode, I say I don't have a ticket, and I didn't, but someone came through and I got a ticket. I paid $100 for it.
I paid $20.
They were charging not enough money for those tickets for that very exclusive concert in San Francisco. I'm not saying tickets should cost a lot, but $20 to see them
in a venue they should have been in twice the size of.
Yeah, but it was great. My sunglasses were eaten by a mosh pit, but they were only $15. Don't buy expensive sunglasses, people. They will only get destroyed.
But it was amazing to hear them play all the greatest hits from Fooly Cooly.
Yeah.
Like hearing Thank You, My Twilight. That was my favorite, I think.
If you can see them play in America, and you won't, go see them.
Yes.
They really should tour more in America. I think they've got enough nerds to hit every major city.
I hope this inspires them to do more. They said beforehand, they're like, this is our first American tour in 7 years. So it's like, geez, you guys got to come back here more often.
Yeah, seriously.
And also, if we may as well tease some more stuff, we haven't recorded them yet, so it's still theoretical.
Yeah.
But we have three really cool interviews,
wow.
I believe, planned.
I was
right
only
now.
Aware of two.
The third one's with me.
Harry. He's here right now.
It's very low stakes.
Okay, so, and we have three really cool ones that are forming as we speak, but you see, you can look forward to those, hopefully. Though, before that is our next live show.
Yes.
It's still coming, just a week away, folks.
So we published our little promo for this earlier in the week, but July 28th, Saturday at 5:30 at the Piano Fight Bar in San Francisco, we are going to be revisiting Camp Krusty, hopefully with video clips this time. It's going to be our first live show with video clips.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be a lot of fun. We've not seen that episode in what now, 2 years?
Jeepers. Yeah. Maybe close to three. No, two.
New jokes, new hot takes. It's a lot of fun. It's a great venue, and our audiences are always great. You can meet us, talk to us after the show. We usually hang around for a while. So yeah, that's a Piano Fight Bar in San Francisco. And if you want to come to the show, it's right off of the BART train line. I believe you get off at Powell Station.
Mm-hmm, and it's just a few blocks away.
Yes, it's a very easy hop, skip, and a jump from mass transit. So it's really easy to get to. It's also free, which is good. Mm-hmm. And they've got great food there. The beer's great. I recommend it. July 28th, Saturday. Be there.
And be square.
And also, this might not happen, but I think it will. I'm putting out feelers on Gary. No, not right
Whoa.
Now.
Hello.
I want to do a Talking Simpsons Live in Portland when I go to Portland again for the Portland Retro Gaming Expo.
Oh, hey.
And I need to find out what bars do that sort of thing and who I can get in touch with.
I would like to go there as well.
Yeah.
So yes,
Henry will be there. We'll fly Henry out too.
Oh,
but
yeah.
I'm sure there's a bar in Portland that will let us do our nerd thing. And it'll be the same weekend as Portland Retro Gaming Expo. So you're going to hear more about that as it gets closer. But that's in the middle of October. And I'm always there. So if you want to come to Portland for that weekend, you'll see me at the Retronauts panel and all around the show. So it's a great show, isn't it, Gary?
Yeah, it's kind of considered to be the best one now, actually, for old games specifically.
For me, it's like, fuck Christmas. It's all about Portland Retro Gaming Expo.
It's consistently the best weekend of my year.
Yeah, and then the Monday after, just like, I'm so depressed.
Yeah. Yeah, the worst Monday of my year.
Yeah.
It's the Garfield of Mondays and the Normal of weekends.
Oh, man, I love it.
Yeah.
They should put that on a t-shirt and sell it there.
Yeah.
But yes, please come to the Portland Retro Gaming Expo. Gary will be there. I'm sure you guys are doing a panel as well.
Yeah, as always, we're doing a panel. We haven't decided what we're going to do just yet. But this is going to be a big year because a bunch of other Duck Feed people are going to be there.
Oh, cool.
As well. So Jeremy, who I do Days of Future Cast, is going to be there as well. We don't have anything live planned, but you can meet Jeremy.
And we always have a meetup. Now we do it together at Quarter World in Portland.
Yeah.
So yeah, you can see us there too. Like lots of times you can meet us in Portland in SF. So yeah, come say hi wherever you can make it.
Hell yeah.
So comments. We have some comments from our last four episodes. I will go first here with Summer 4'2". And Fresher Than says, I worked in the licensed t-shirt industry for 11 years. I didn't make any of those stated, but I was responsible for some pretty bad ones. Unfortunately, you just have to make whatever kind of crap Walmart and Hot Topic are looking for to keep your job. My favorite licensor-rejected design was a Sonic the Hedgehog design of him laying on his side, and I gave him a word bubble that said, "Sup, ladies?" And they said, "Sonic the Hedgehog is not interested in ladies and is not a sexual being."
So that's canon, folks.
That's true. I've seen some pictures online.
Yeah.
Sonic is Volcel, man. I like that. That reminds me of a funny tweet from Merritt Copas. She on Twitter had canonically only these three characters have fucked in the Sonic universe, and it's the three characters who have children, which is Robotnik's grandfather, Robotnik's dad, and Cream the Rabbit's mom.
I knew one of them, Cream the Rabbit's mom. Wow.
Yes.
Okay.
They're the only ones who fucked. Nobody else fucks.
That reminds me of a story from the ancient Grandma's Virginity podcast. If you like Rick and Morty,
yes.
It is sort of Rick and Morty Begins.
Yes.
That might sound horrible to some of you, but Ryan Ridley, a writer for Rick and Morty, is on that podcast. He's one of the hosts. And he basically made a six-figure salary he lived off of from one t-shirt. And I believe the t-shirt was like a little stick figure in bandages, and it says, I do my own stunts.
Yep.
And he made like $100,000 off of that. He lived in LA for like years off of that one t-shirt. On the podcast, he is miserable. He's poor. He's his teeth are falling apart. It's a terrible time for everyone involved in that production. But
now he's a Rick and Morty executive producer, and he's that was we went to that Harmontown show. We forgot to mention part of it was at the Harmontown show in LA. Dan Harmon kind of humble bragging about how rich he is now. Not even humble bragging, just bragging. He's like
bragging.
You know what? We booked the Rick and Morty deal. I'm buying a Tesla. I'm doing it. Like it's
and he had his assistant pick out all the parts. Yes. Like, I'm too busy. I'm Dan Harmon.
My assistant bought my car for me. It's like Jesus Christ. Like you're really personable and
you're embracing it.
Want to hit this next one, Henry?
Jackie Beckwith says about Summer 4'2". Growing up in Massachusetts, I loved this episode because Little Pwagamansquat Port feels just like the sort of New England tradition of bastardizing Algonquin language words and names into English to our place names. Even Massachusetts itself is from the Massachusetts people we stole our land from. Towns and areas with names that might as well have appeared to include Paponset Island, Sipawinset, Cumaquid,
Henry,
Anisquam River, and the Quinebaug River, just to name a few. Sorry if I mispronounced those massholes.
Right. Did you think there's a chance you didn't mispronounce one of them?
Maybe.
With all due respect.
I think I got them all.
I think you probably rounded the bunch.
Of course, I grew up in Western Massachusetts and was also too much of a working class kid to be able to travel to those beaches, even in my own state. What I can tell you about is a place that Nina mentioned, Satan's Kingdom. Unincorporated community is a generous way of describing a stretch of state-protected wilderness, possibly sparsely populated by a few stubborn people, and likely named by paranoid colonial settlers who were afraid of the thick woods. With Satan's Kingdom is a swamp colorfully referred to as Hell's Kitchen. There's lots of hiking trails there, and in the winter, cross-country skiing and snowmobiling. I would go snowmobiling there with my dad, and if you stop there at night and turn your machine off, the woods are so thick and so isolated, you are plunged into the perfect darkness and silence. It's great!
I thought Satan's Kingdom would have better lighting.
Yeah!
Come on, Satan.
I imagine much better.
Gary is going to do this next one. These are Treehouse of Horror 7 comments.
Yeah. So about Treehouse of Horror 7, Shy Ranger says, in The Thing and I, every time I watch it, it was the cut for syndication version. And one of the cuts was when they run off to search for Hugo at Radio Shack. And Homer tells Bart to stay home and tape the hockey game. So in the cut version, they mention Radio Shack and turn off just as Bart stays there. As a kid, I kept asking, why didn't you go too, Bart? And now I know why.
Yeah, there are some jokes that exist in a vacuum that they cut out for syndication, but they often cut out tags, which make the joke sweeter, and I don't like that.
No, as listeners know, I judge anyone who learned from the syndication. I'm like, that's like telling me you read the wrong version of the Bible. You know which one.
I only do the annotated books on tape for books.
Yeah. Unabridged.
That's what I meant. Oh, annotated books on tape would be tedious as hell. Get out sub cassette 7.
Do they pause to like read the footnotes
or listen to them to eject longer. And put in the new the micro cassette?
Turn in tape 14 to know more about this reference. Okay, so Matthew Cooper says the Genesis Tub and the Little People share many similarities with the 1941 short story titled Microscopic God, in which a scientist creates artificial life inside of his laboratory, which eventually develops into an advanced civilization capable of generating an impenetrable force field to cut itself off from humanity. I read the story in an old science fiction compilation over 20 years ago, but at the time it immediately reminded me of this episode. And I feel that is a very common sci-fi presence in which a human is given the chance to play God and it all sucks for them and it's their downfall.
Yeah, it's, I mean, I feel like that's one of the root things of science fiction. It's why I don't think they were intentionally ripping off the same thing, but it's why Futurama has such a similar episode as well of Bender having his own little group of people and he plays God and then talks to God about what it was like.
It's like the playing God angle, but then also just scale. Because there's also, what if we're real small, is the flip side of that. I've seen
we
that
think
as well.
We're the biggest thing in the universe. What if there's giants?
That was actually the twist ending of that Twilight Zone, in which a man finds a tiny civilization, stays on the planet to rule over them, and then he's crushed by giants in the last minute.
Which is phenomenal.
Yeah,
like a gigantic Monty Python boot comes down and just destroys
him. Just like pick him up and he's just squished.
Yeah, I love that. The irony is so thick there. They're like, well, what's the ironic ending? Well, he squished guys, so he gets squished.
Yeah.
Like, nothing theoretical or symbolic or metaphorical. It's like, no, he's literally squished.
The squisher has become the squished.
So Daniel Feit talks about, he covers something we covered in the history of the episode, because we talked about the World Series and how it would preempt the Simpsons. And so DeFight has these thoughts. Forgive the sports gushing, but the Yankees winning the World Series was a big deal. The Yankees have a reputation for always being champs. They've won more titles than anybody else. But in the 80s and early 90s, the team was lousy. Meanwhile, the Braves were red hot. Yeah, go Atlanta. Having won the series in 1995, as they were the favorites. FYI, both Wade Boggs and Daryl Strawberry from Homer at the Bat were on the 96 Yankees. Mm. 1996 was the only year Wade ever got to win the World Series, and images of Wade celebrating the championship on a police horse would have surely become a meme if anyone used the internet in 1996. The Yanks and Braves would meet again in 1999, but by then the Yankees were at full power and won 4-0.
Thank you. As usual, sports are lost on us, except for Henry sometimes.
There's sometimes on sports.
But I appreciate this this detail that we can't bring to the show.
I know about that Wade Boggs Yankee thing just because it's it was a point in the baseball or Blurn's Ball episode of Futurama where Leela plays it. Wade Boggs is in it and he's in a Yankee hat. And on the commentary, David X. Cohen is a New Yorker and a Yankees fan. Meanwhile, John DiMaggio is a Boston fan. And to Bostonians, Wade Boggs is a sock. He's a Red Sox. And so they get in an argument like, he should be wearing the Red Sox hat. He's like, well, he did win the World Series as a Yankee. And they kind of grumble at each other.
Tension.
But as we all know, Wade Boggs is most famous for drunken bar fights over prime ministers.
Lord Palmerston.
Lord Palmerston.
So I'm up next here.
No.
It's Gary.
Yeah. Moving on to responses to You Only Move Twice, possibly my favorite Simpsons episode. Maverick 45 says, Days of Wine and Ozes is the one where Barney gets sober. Codependence Day is the one where Marge is a wino. Get your facts straight or you'll all be back doing Come Blow Your Horn at the Westport Dinner Theater.
I got to say, behind the scenes for you people, so this is what we do. If we're not sure of something, we shut the show down and look it up and then start up. So we're not as smart as we actually sound, but it also drives us crazy when something is wrong on a podcast. We know it drives you crazy too. But when we're recording with Ali and Julia, it was their space and their time, and I wasn't completely sure. And I knew I could have been wrong, but I didn't want to be like, no, stop right now. Yeah. We can't be wrong on our podcast.
It was getting late in the day, and I was like, it's been long. I don't want to keep... They've already recorded with us for 2 hours now. I any way to shorten this is better, but I at least appreciate this correction comes with a good reference.
Yes, thank you. Add a joke to your correction. It goes down much easier. So Joe Quigley says about Bart's remedial class, I feel like there is too much going on with Bart's class. I think you guys are right that the broader joke is on the education system. The Canadian kid really hits home, as I have one brilliant student who was stuck in an English language learner's class after moving to the States, despite being fluent in English.
Gotta learn to remove those U's.
With that said, the episode feels like it has its cake and it eats it too. It's clear that the teacher and program is shitty, but the kids are also depicted as being toddler-like in their cuckoo reaction, as well as the shitty musical chairs games. The yay, you're all winners also feels like it throws in an extra level of criticism that doesn't necessarily jive with the original conceit of the plot line.
You know what? We didn't talk about it then, but that is kind of a everyone gets a medal joke.
It is. I mean, there's not enough to develop this this satire or this message, but the message is they're teaching kids slower so they can catch up, which doesn't make any sense, which it's more complicated than that in terms of the education system.
I would think.
But I would expect Cypress Creek to have a nice education system that works, not like Springfield.
It seems like maybe Scorpio has a eugenics program.
It's a dark underbelly.
Yeah, isolate the dumb children. They'll be our mules. So he goes on to say, honestly, Sideshow Bob Roberts' handling of Bart being held back was a much more humane and funny direction. I feel like they were sort of stuck with what to do with Bart without retreading. The previous normal episode of the show already dealt with a more realistic Children of 1996 responding to Bart. So they went with a retread of an older episode. And I have to say, as much as we complain about Matt Groening and what he says now, he was, again, the lifeguard for bad ableist jokes, bad racist jokes. And he, on the commentary, was like, this was tricky to do. I didn't want this to be, he doesn't say that, but you could easily make, oh, this is a class full of R words. And that's the joke. I mean, these jokes were on TV. We talked about in Living Color and how Handyman was a character.
It was just normal. We're all just like, it's just what jokes are, isn't it? Well, I mean, fucking Saved by the Bell did the hand motion joke.
Oh, yeah.
Like, they would go like, duh, and do the hand motion we all know. And to talk about the, that's our word.
Yeah.
And that's shitty. Like, it's really bad that the cool kids on Saved by the Bell were like, yeah, we make fun of people who are disabled.
The nerds are like the horror. I mean, listen to Go Bayside, the entire podcast. The nerds are the horrible underclass. And so many guests on that show are like, they're making fun of autistic people on this, on Saved by the Bell.
Yeah, it's a real punching down. But they're like, well, I think they thought that's what broad comedy is, right? You make fun of people who are different.
Yes, the writers in their 60s are remembering their high school days, and in the 60s probably, or the 50s.
I like, too, you brought it up. You were the one who revealed it, Bob, of the comments, the annotations on storyboards that Matt Groening had.
PC Matt.
Yeah, PC Matt. He called himself, like, sorry, PC Matt again, but Richard Sakai had problems with how he drew Japanese people last time. Be a little careful, or this joke better be about the Elephant Man and not just... That was another just sneak in. They do it. They did that with a critic all the time. They're like, well, no, we're not making fun of disfigured people. It's referencing the Elephant Man.
Yeah. Like, with this joke, though, I feel like they did handle it sort of well in a way that they give the kids funny reasons for being in that class. One is a pyromaniac, which is funny. One has a head injury, and one is from Canada. Like, these are not, like, the way they're in here is funny, and I don't think it's ableist. The cuckoo thing is kind of weird, but I do like the explanation. I really love the line, I fell off the jungle gym, and I woke up in here.
Yeah, that's really great.
It's just stated in a very simple way, like, I woke up here.
And they're all voiced by Nancy Cartwright, and they're all previously, what, Ralph-ish?
They were designed all to look like Ralph, have the Ralph hairline of his...
I mean, and they do make R-word jokes with Ralph. There's a joke later in the series where he puts an ice cream cone on his head and says, I'm a unitard. So,
oh, man, I forgot that one.
They lean towards the...
Wiggum has a joke of, like, all the special classes want him.
Yeah. And if you go back to the... Not to linger too long on this, but if you go back to the commentaries, they do say, oh, isn't it funny that Ralph is retarded? He's so retarded. Like, it was the era of throwing around the word retarded.
Yeah.
So,
yes.
I mean, we've grown since then,
I hope so. So, last comment here. This is from Oily Maniac on You Only Move Twice. Also, I feel like him being named Hank Scorpio is a bit of a subtle joke. Like, Hank is a pretty normal name, the kind of name you'd expect from the guy you could grab a beer with. Oh, thanks, is a Hank is a type boss. A guy you could grab a beer with type boss. But Scorpio is over-the-top James Bond-esque supervillain name. This might be obvious, but as someone who doesn't remember a time when I didn't know who Hank Scorpio was, I never thought about how that was possible intended till now, and I think he's totally on to something.
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate you pointing this out. I didn't talk about it on the show because I thought it was self-evident. Like, Hank Scorpio was a very, like, great contradiction in terms of tone.
But it's worth pointing out how that contradiction is shadowed by everything about him.
Yeah, right?
Like,
that's true.
He is the, like, that's the premise of the character, but it extends, like, articulates in a bunch of different ways.
He is a very personable Hank, like, average Hank guy, but also a supervillain. And we didn't talk about this during the Ali and Julia podcast, but on the commentary for this episode, it was in the gulf of Bond between the last movie and Casino Royale. And on the commentary, they're like, do people even know who James Bond is anymore? Recorded in like 2005.
Right.
So they're just like, we have to explain who James Bond is to the listeners at home, which is a funny idea.
And I did also forget to mention that in, I believe it was The World Is Not Enough, they actually do have a villain who is kind of this guy. It's, the Star of Brazil, I'm going to have to... Jonathan Pryce. Jonathan Pryce plays him, and he is a Steve Jobs, Bill Gates type who is just a multimedia empire guy who's like, Well, I don't have to fight you, James Bond. I hire people to do that. Like, I'm just a rich guy. And he even makes fun of Michelle Yeoh's kung fu. He's like, ah, your kung fu, whatever. I own shit. So I think they even had a little bit of, they were on, at the very least, parallel thought with their villains.
Was that post-Scorpio?
It was post-Scorpio. Okay. It was like 98, 99 for that one.
So that's the end of our questions. Gary Butterfield, you are our special guest. Thanks for sitting in for this. Let people know what you do, what podcast you're on. I listen to all of them. They're great. And I'm a supporter of your network, too.
Thank
so,
you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you. Mm-hmm. I'm on duckfeed.tv, that podcast network. We do shows about a variety of topics, quite a few different shows about quite a few different topics. So video games, different things in pop culture, books, movies. You know, we have a love and relationship podcast, which is our newest one called Heartbeat City, which you might hear some familiar voices on at some point. So you can check that out. If you go to duckfeed.tv, you can see all of our offerings. And if you want to support that network, that's patreon.com/duckfeedtv. Every amount counts and a little bit gets you a lot. Head on over there and check out and see what we have on offer.
Awesome. Thank you. And remember, folks, July 28th, 5:30 p.m., Piano Fight in San Francisco. We better see you there or we'll be very upset and disappointed.
Hail to thee, Camp Krusty.
Yes.
Piano Fight Bar.
We'll be singing the entire song horribly.
Over and over.
It's going to be an hour of just that, maybe. We'll see you then,
you'll
folks.
Enjoy that with your little SOBs.
Infotainment.